When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
It's been wild in the trial of Karen Reed. A full emotional outburst, forensic firefights, and even some red solo cup crime scene shenanigans. As we gear up to chat with forensic psychologist Siobhan Scott about what all this drama means in human terms, let's recap the latest from Karen's own explicitive-laced voicemails and a panicky "I hit him at the scene allegedly" to the defense's elaborate house party gone wrong theory getting poked full of holes. There's plenty to unpack. Siobhan, based on everything we've seen, what do Karen's shifting words and behaviors tell you about her state of mind that evening?
You know, I always go back to a very intoxicated woman. There's no doubt about that. And a lot of emotional garbage cooking with her. Not a happy, stable relationship by any means. And just hysteria, you know, a lot of drunken hysteria, which is a bad combination always.
What's interesting about this is just the little snapshot that we got to see of her life. We got to see this chaotic moment. Do you think it happened in a vacuum? Do you think this was just a complete one-off and she's just this hysteric and acting like this, you know, this was a big one-off? Or, I mean, this is just speculation, but is this likely kind of a pattern of behavior with her in certain ways, shapes, or forms?
Yeah, people by her age have established patterns of how they do relationships. What they call love, you know, tends to be, certainly sounds like with her, what we know about that night and her phone calls, her 53 phone calls, that there's a pattern of mixing anger with love and a lot of concern about her partner's sexual behavior. And I would guess that this is the way she does relationships, probably not just this moment in time.
You think there's some ex-boyfriends out there that are watching this going, "Oh, I dodged a bullet here."
I would bet money on that. Would bet money on that. Yes.
If only we could find those people and talk to them. I mean, and if you do want to talk and you are an ex of Karen Reed, there's plenty of ways to get in contact with us. Or honestly, just a friend, acquaintance, somebody who knew her at some level. Before all of this, I don't want to talk about the case. I want to talk about what was it like working with her? What was it like having her as a friend? What was it like having her as a partner, a significant other? If anybody out there wants to talk, we can even do it anonymously. You don't even have to be on the air. I just want to have the conversation. I want a little insight into that, because I think that would tell us a lot. I have a good feeling on what it's going to be, but again, it's all just kind of conjecture. There's a lot to get through here. There's a lot of testimony that has come out since we last talked, and we're going to work through a lot of that. But let's start with the voicemails, because that's been a big thing that we've heard them before, but they were laid out very concisely in court the other day. These are the voicemails from the night of the incident. These are voicemails that started pretty much directly after John O'Keefe was struck, like within minutes, the phone calls start going. So let's just kind of paint the picture here for a moment. And let's assume for a moment that she knows she hit him. Okay. I want to go down that road rather than the road of she's clueless, because I don't think she is. And we'll get more into that in a little bit. But just for the sake of the argument, let's assume she knows something happened, that he's injured. Now, how much this is registering in her mind because of how drunk she is, I don't know. But the fact that she's concerned that he may have gotten hit by a snowplow, and she even talks in some other clips we're going to see of this is in the vicinity of the last place she saw him, not going in the door, but over in this part of the yard, by the car, by the flagpole, kind of tells you that she saw him there. And her reactions and her tone in her reactions of this these voicemails, rationalizing, and the way that she's speaking, not just to John in these voicemails, but I think the way she's speaking to herself in these voicemails. I want to kind of go through this and piecemeal it piece by piece here, Siobhan, because there's some things to unpack, I think, as I've gone through them a bit. Let's take a listen and go through some of this. That's voicemail one. That's all it is. John, I effing hate you. If this is the Karen Reed that we've kind of come to understand as who she might be, with a lot of narcissistic traits, we can't diagnose her. So I can't say she is. You can't say she is. We don't know. But just observing the behavior. Why the rage of John, I effing hate you, right after she supposedly dropped him off at this party and she saw him go in? It doesn't seem to be an appropriate response. It to me, I'm getting John did something to her, or mm-hmm. put her in a position that really, really struck her as, oh my God, how am I going to deal with this? That's just the little piece of this. It's John, I effing hate you. Four words. What do you garner out of this? Just that piece so far.
Yeah, it's hard to know what was actually going on in the car before, mm-hmm. you know, he got out of the car on that fateful event. And she supposedly saw him go in the house. Mm-hmm. And I guess her story is he was supposed to signal to her that it was okay to come in or come back and get her. Mm-hmm. And when that didn't happen, if any of that is even true, mm-hmm. you know, she immediately took it as some kind of rejection, or he's in the house having sex with someone. So that would be a bizarre thing to do. Why wouldn't you, my first thought, why wouldn't you get out of the car and go yourself and say, what's up? What's going on? Mm-hmm. So the whole thing is weird, but I would have to say, let's assume that she did believe that she hit him in some way. What had been going on before? There must have been some kind of argument. And she's having this, as I talk about, the borderline reaction of, I hate you, but don't leave me, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And it's definitely off. It doesn't fit normal behavior at all.
And that's what I'm wondering about here. The rage that she has, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty confident on this, that they had been arguing in the car, at least mm-hmm. I think she's alluded mm-hmm. to that. And if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but I believe that that's been alluded to, that there was some sort of argument. I mean, she said yeah. that they argued and she left him at the waterfall, which again, that's not true, but mm-hmm. she's alluded to that they were arguing. So maybe that's a piece of this. Yesterday, mm-hmm. On the program, I had an interesting thought. And actually, my therapist brought this up because, of course, I talk about Karen Reeds in therapy because it's part of my life doing
this. It's really affecting you, the trauma of this case. Yes. Well, actually, bringing up memories.
Well, it's triggering because I'm connecting a lot of this to actual past relationships I've been in. And it's like, oh, I've been with someone like her before.
Yeah.
But and this is just pure speculation. So take it for what it is. But if you're sitting that there and they're sitting in the car for a while, because we know that vehicle is sitting there for a while, and they're arguing and she does not go into the house. A lot of people have been speculating about, you know, the injuries to John O'Keefe's arm. Was it a dog? What was it? Was it this? Was it that? I have the injuries up on the screen here behind me, and I just want to point this out. It's the same arm injury. It's just different shots, different versions of like the color correction on it. But if you look at this closely and you kind of look at the marks, this looks more like a human claw. This looks more like someone's arm maybe holding tight with nails. Now, I don't know if she had nails. I have no, my therapist actually said, I wish they would have checked under Karen's fingernails for DNA that night.
Boy, that's a really good point. Yeah.
Not that it means she killed him, but it means if that's her claw marks, because they're very light. These are not deep wounds. It may be hard to see out there, but they're not. These are very just like you scratch with nails really hard, or you're sitting there for a while and or someone's trying to pull away from you and you got the death grip going on, that could very easily happen. So I'm thinking, pure conjecture here, and this plays into where we're going with these voicemails. They're sitting in the car. She's over here. He's over here. They're kind of facing each other, talking. He's going to go out this door over here. Talking, arm over here. John wants to leave. He's had enough. He's going to go. She's holding on to him. Gets out of the grip. Doesn't continue to give her the attention that she wants. Now, whether that's her claw marks or not, kind of besides the point, but I'm thinking something of that nature probably took place to enrage her the way that she did, where it was just a flat out, no, I'm going, I'm leaving. Gets out of the car and she's enraged, throws it in reverse. Now, not with the intent of hitting him, but mad that he's going the opposite direction of her. And, oh God, hits him. Maybe realizes she hits him. Sees him get up. He doesn't look mortally wounded in her own words. Stumbling around the last place that she saw him, as she's said herself. And thinks, you know, he'll figure it out. He's fine. Does not want to take any sort of acceptance that, oh God, I think I just hit him. The guy everybody loves, the guy who's a saint taking in his niece and nephew. And he's so beloved by everybody. She has her image over here. This is her. This is the image that is going to be going to her because of her actions. And she is far more concerned, as we know folks like this are, with how people perceive them. Not how they necessarily perceive themselves, how people perceive them. And this doesn't equate with this, with hitting John O'Keefe. So she can't handle that. And she just ends up leaving and trying to talk herself out of not watching him die, because she just thinks something else would have happened. Maybe he gets into the house. Maybe he stumbles down to Bella's mom's house and they have sex.
They were having sex.
Exactly. Yeah. And something happened, because then she very quickly goes to, you're sleeping with other women.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.